Wilson Contreras on to Windy City. Brian Beto, Jordan Bernfield coming up as well. Wilson was at Wrigley before the Cubs got swept by the White Sox on Sunday night. He was with Laureus USA's Chicago Comeback Campaign, which is a campaign designed to mobilize the Chicago community to send a letter of support calling on legislative stakeholders and funders to prioritize sustained funding for local youth sports programming, which is obviously a beautiful cause. Let's get people playing and let's give everybody the same access to equipment and fields as much as we can, as best as we can. So I got to interview Wilson yesterday. Damon Lamar Reed, a Chicago-based artist, was there with this huge mural that was absolutely beautiful. Check out the picture that I said of Wilson in the fan-sided article. But we're going to hear from Wilson on wanting to stay with the Cubs. Keys from 2016 that he took out of that team that maybe perhaps could be on the next great Cubs World Series team. And, yeah, playing hard. Contreras is one of those guys who used to, at least, go down the line 100% all the time. And I'd be sitting there like, you're going to get hurt. You don't need to do that. It's a routine ground ball to second. You can run 60% to first, and that's totally fine. So I ask him about playing hard. And then Jordan and Beto jumping on here as we react to Tom Ricketts' letter to season ticket holders. Interesting piece of writing from Tom. And, yeah, where do Jed Hoyer and the Cubs go from here? Do they build around Contreras? I think you'll really enjoy the pod coming up, which is, of course, sponsored by, you know it, you love it, Manscaped. Go to manscaped.com, put in that promo code FANSIDED20, you get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get yourself the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. Just used it myself this past week up in Michigan, little Boyne Mountain, taking some time away, and nothing like being on vacation and just getting yourself together mentally, but also you got to look good, right? You got to feel good, you got to feel together. And, hey, a little rejuvenation. I had to bring along my Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker. It's waterproof. That's right. You do it in the shower. That's where you go. And you also get the two free gifts, the boxers, the Shed travel bag. I had my Shed travel bag carrying my Lawnmower 4.0. Life is good. And, yes, clean and ready to roll. Get yourself your Lawnmower 4.0 at manscaped.com. You will not be disappointed. All right, the Windy City Cubs podcast, starting with Wilson Contreras, and then Beto and Bernfield, starts right now.
Showtime.
Let's talk sport for good, and you've always been a guy that loves giving back. What about today means the most to you?
It means a lot. It means a lot, especially with the this beautiful campaign, Chicago's come back. I just want to make sure that the kids, the child had the same opportunity that I had, because everything that I had is because of the sports. And sport means a lot to me. I want to make sure that every kid in Chicago, in the Chicago area, had the same opportunity that I had. Help them grow, help them to create a culture to be good in life. So I'm really happy to be part of, and I'm super excited to keep continue growing the nice culture, and I just want to make sure that every child had the same opportunity that I had.
Did you have a lot as a kid?
Actually, yes. Sports gave me the huge opportunity to be a baseball player. It's a little different from Venezuela, but I think that USA needs to keep creating the opportunity to those kids that They are in different situation than I. So I think sports helps people to grow a lot, and that's what I want to make sure of.
So young Wilson had a mitt. You had cleats.
No, I don't. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't have the same opportunity. But now that I'm in the big leagues, I want to make sure that every kid has the same opportunity.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
So obviously a different year for you guys. How are you feeling a couple of weeks past here, just sort of stepping into your new role?
It's been a little different. It's been a little different since everybody got trained. There's a lot of new faces, a lot of new energy. which I like, and I like what I see from my guys that they just got called up. We're just trying to make sure that we stick together. We win and lose together. And we just want to make sure that they feel comfortable enough to play good baseball.
So I've got a picture in my phone, August 17th, 2016. You're at Tony's Burritos on Damon and Belmont. After a game, no one recognizes you. It's 2 months after your debut. And I was kind of like, hey, Wilson, can I just get a quick pic with you? What do you remember about that guy who was going to Tony's Burritos, not getting noticed, to the guy that's standing here today?
Man, it's a completely different story. I used to live by the area when I got here, and it was really fun. I could have got out and very little people recognized who I was. 5 years later, I'd be walking the streets of Chicago, and I got recognized by a lot of people. It feels good. It feels great. That was one of my dreams since I was a kid. And I wish that every kid in the USA and the world have the same opportunity that I have to dream big. And then they have to know that there's nothing impossible. If I'm here, they can fulfill their dream to be the big leader, to be in different sports. But it makes me proud of getting recognized in Chicago.
You want to be here when you guys win the World Series next. What did that, when you think back to 2016, what did that team have that you would like to bring into, what would it look like in the next version? What do you remember about the chemistry or something about that unit?
Yeah, of course, I would love to be a part of a new World Series for Chicago Cubs. I'm in this ship and I want to be here. Of course, there's a lot of decisions that I can't control. And from what I remember that I would like to have back is the mix of veteran and young guys that were mixed together, they created really, a really good chemistry, and they stick together for sure. In 2016, that team has stick together since April until November, and I would like to have that back, to have the same chemistry, to have the experience, to have the young guys. And by the time that I wish to get my second World Series, I want to be one of the leaders.
Okay, you're not going to like this last question, but I always worry that long season, 162 games, playing hard, running as hard as you can to first, like it's like one play versus the whole season, it's scary, but you've always been full-on effort guy, not worried about getting hurt. I'm like, why not go 70% down the line and just make sure you're healthy for the next day? What is it with you that you just don't play that way?
Man, I think it's my heart. My heart. Every time that I cross the line, I forgot about everything and I give my 100%. But with experience, you learn how to manage your energy and you know that your health is really important. Thankfully, this year I've been healthy since the season start. Knock on wood that I stay that way, because, like I said, the experience had me to control my energy, to control my emotions. And we all know that in a routine ground ball, you don't have to go 100%. But that's what I did before. That's what I felt it was right to do. But when you're a catcher and you're catching every single day in a hot day, in a night game, from night game to day game, it's really hard to give 100%. There's when you need to know what you need to do best for your body.
Yeah. Great giving back, Wilson. Good to see you.
Thank you, guys.
I think we can start the podcast right there, that you're trying to get your TV set up so you can watch Bulls Summer League basketball, Brian Beto, which I think is a great option for Cub fans right now.
It is. The Bulls have done more for me maybe in the last 2 weeks outside of the D Rose era than they've done for me in the last 23 years or so by distracting me a little bit from what's going on with the Cubs. So Bulls Summer League basketball, I just want to see Patrick Williams just absolutely crap on someone, dunk just viciously right now to make me feel better about my Cubs fandom.
So I want you guys to be really honest here, but also have an open mind / heart. Because we're, of course, riding it out here. But there is this other team in the city that swept the Cubs this weekend, that has Eloy Jimenez, former Cub, has Dylan Cease, former Cub, has Ryan Tepera, has Craig Kimbrell.
is only 7.1 miles south. The Cubs clearly don't care if the White Sox win it because they've done everything they can to help them this year and help themselves in the process. Will you jump on the White Sox 2021 bandwagon?
No.
I enjoyed the dead silence there for a while. I mean, you can't see it in audio form, but they both just stared at me.
No.
No, I mean, I think I would.
Really?
Yeah. You would? Well, good.
Yeah.
I'm sticking to my same, I guess, thought process with the Sox, regardless if they're good and bad. It's indifference. Don't really care if they're good. Don't really care if they're bad.
You know what's hard about that, though, for a Cub fan? All I heard from White Sox fans and to Windy City White Sox podcast, I mean, Courtney, Mo, the King, I never go to Wrigley. Wrigley's a shithole. Like,
those people are just, that narrative is just so bad in both sides. And then people like saying, oh, nobody goes to Sox games. That's what Cubs fans say. Like, how can you go there? You're going to get shot walking out of there. Just a bunch of like garbage narratives that's been around our whole lives, that when those people come up with those, I'm like, all right, you're done. I dealt with that more as a kid. I rooted against the Sox when I was a kid because I didn't want to have to go into school the next day and be like, oh, did you see Frank Thomas did? Sammy Sosa struck out 4 times. It's like, dude, I don't want to hear that. But now that I'm older and I don't have to deal with people like going, thanks Cubs, every 2 seconds, even though I did see a lot of that this weekend from when Eloy hit bombs. Like, I don't really care anymore. They don't affect my life one way or the other.
I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, I would say that they don't really affect me in an emotional sense. I think that when I covered them, it was easier because I didn't really have emotion in it, but I like a lot of their players. I find them very likable. So if they do well, I think it's good. Honestly, I'm in a very small minority, I think, of Chicago sports fans, but I wish that people liked both teams because I do like the Sox, but I feel like whenever I have resentment to the Sox, it is because Sox fans live to see us lose. So it's like kind of a hard feeling because in my perfect world, we would all like both teams because we all live in Chicago, but I know that that will never happen. So I more just get annoyed at Sox fans' delight for our demise. But I would like to see the Sox do well, if that makes sense. I know I'm threading some needles here, but I do.
They care more about us than we care about them. Yes. Is that fair?
I don't even think that's debatable. And I know that there are Sox fans that would push back at that because they would feel triggered by a comment like that. But I don't even think that. I think if we're all being honest, I get why they hate us. I get it.
Yeah,
I
me
understand
too.
It. I don't agree with it, but I completely understand it. But I still like, I would like to live in a world, which will never happen, where we could like and celebrate both of them.
Well, you have an opportunity to do that, Jordan. You can put
I can, but nobody else will.
Okay.
My point.
Okay. Yes. If the White Sox get to the World Series, I'll just be interested to see if Burnfield is sitting there with Matilda, with Deanna. I doubt with your dad, I don't see Jeff Burnfield coming over to watch that game, for the record.
No, but I don't think that my dad has mellowed on that over the years. Like, I think that he finds plenty of their players likable. It's hard not to find Tim Anderson likable, right?
He's the best.
It's hard not to find Lucas Giolito likable. I mean, they have a lot of guys that, we're being honest, super likable.
Outside their manager. Right, I cling to their manager to balance things out.
Manager's not likable, but everybody else I think is pretty likable. So it's hard. Like, am I supposed to hate them because they hate us? I really think that that's one of the reasons why Cub fans hate the Sox. It's because we feel threatened, because a lot of the culture of the White Sox is to like destroy and hate the Cubs. Everything Cubs.
Do you pay attention to the Cubs versus Sox record since interleague play started? You don't pay attention to that.
No,
I know it's close, but the White Sox are up. But I think I saw a bunch of jokes saying yesterday, being like, the Cubs are really going to have to do some work to retain used to be called the BP Crosstown Cup right before the oil spill. And then they got rid of the BP part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That... Did they give that out yesterday? I didn't see.
No, because the Cubs can still retain it, right? Because they have won the recent one. So if they split, it's the team that had recently won it, right?
So if the White Sox win one game in the next series, which they obviously will, then they get the cup.
They get the all. They all get the coveted cup.
Yeah, I think it's going to be 6-0.
I hope so.
I want the draft pick.
Agreed.
For the record, I thought this weekend was going to be 48-0. So they actually played better, only losing 19-6.
Your expectation. Yeah. Did you? I didn't even see it live. Did you guys go nuts during the Romine homer? Had to be great theater off of Kimbrel.
This is the randomness
of it.
This is a bad thing to say on a Cubs podcast. I didn't watch one inning or one pitch. I saw absolutely nothing. So Jordan, you're our eyes and ears for this one, because clearly Beto and I were not there.
So neither was I, because I was working all weekend.
You were calling baseball games. Those guys can probably play for the Cubs. I feel like in the year, he's like, gee, Henry, you could play for the Cubs. That's
right.
Like,
so Friday,
you had all weekend.
Yes. Friday, I was in Milwaukee watching baseball for this tournament that I was calling on Saturday with the great Mike Huff, former White Sox player. And so we were at games all day, didn't see the first game. So we had a production meeting and then dinner. And I saw on social media that Romine hit this home run. And then I saw that they were losing in the 10th. I think Goodwin homered or something.
Yeah.
So it was 6-4. And I didn't even know what happened after that. So we went to dinner hours later. And I just assumed that the Cubs had lost 6-4. They lost 8-6. The next day we did two baseball games. And then I was driving to the DMB show that Beto and I were both at Saturday night. So I didn't see any of the games Saturday. And then I got off the Peloton in the first inning, figuring I'll turn on game 3, and Davies had already given up 3 homers. And I watched him give up the homer to Vaughn. And I was like, well, this is not how I'm spending my Sunday night now. So clicker went, and I didn't see any of it except for the Vaughn
Sunday night, no baseball. What were you watching Sunday night? What was on the Carmen television?
So
were you not home?
No, I was not home. Friday I was up at Boyne Mountain tennis camp, losing to 15-year-old Katia, who has braces and beat me. And it was an absolute horrible moment in my life.
This doesn't seem weird at all.
No, it was, well, it was, depending on your point of view, slightly weird. Not weird for me, because I don't know, lots of people of all ages play tennis, but me competing against a 15-year-old, I suppose, is a little bit awkward. And losing to Katia and being as embarrassed as I was just straight awful, and just avoiding the rest of the people at camp for the next hour as I had to digest it before the doubles tournament started. And then on Friday, I did the rush with Cap, and I left after I did it live from Boyne Mountain after losing to Katia. Didn't see any of Friday. Saturday, I was back in business and playing some weirdo in Highland Park in tennis, who was complaining about my etiquette, and who I was so angry about losing to Katia that I just started, like, all my anger issues just came out and I started screaming at this guy. And that was that made me feel good, but I didn't see any of the game. And then last night I was writing up the Wilson Contreras piece, who is on the podcast, who you just heard from today, which I get to talk to Wilson for 5 minutes yesterday about noon. There's a sweet initiative that's going on that Wilson is behind, trying to get people playing baseball and equipment and all that stuff. So Wilson's a great, great man, which leads me to, I want to talk about Contreras and whether you think the Cubs should build around him, whether that's the main piece. But before we do that, so we'll do that in 5 minutes. And this was a long-winded answer as to why I wasn't watching, but have you guys seen the letter that Tom Ricketts sent to season ticket holders?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw it last week.
Okay. So for those who didn't, I'm just going to read it. This past week has been extremely hard for everyone, especially our team and our fans. It's impossible to properly prepare for parting with players who personify what it means to be a Cub. While we believe the decisions we took were right for our organization, they were nonetheless difficult to make. For nearly a decade, we've had the joy of watching Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, and Chris Bryant set franchise records, win countless awards, and become World Series champions and amazing ambassadors for our franchise and the city. Their individual and collective contributions to our organization cannot be overstated. They are forever etched in Cubs history and the heart of our fans. Keeping our core together as long as we did helped create one of the most successful eras of Cubs baseball. It wasn't without a price, as we traded several promising prospects from 2016 to 2020 in our quest to win another World Series. Over the past few weeks, it became clear it was time to make decisions focused on our future, not our past. However, we do not regret pouring everything we had into keeping the championship window open as long as possible. You didn't pour everything you had into it. As David Ross said, the greatest legacy of Anthony, Javi, and Chris is they were part of a team that raised expectations. Cubs fans are no longer content with merely making the playoffs. As we reset our team, please know we share your higher expectations. With 5 postseason appearances in the last 6 years, including reaching the NLCS 3 times and our historic World Series championship, sustainable on-field success is the new standard. We're focused on replenishing our farm system and reloading our roster to build our next great Cubs team. The recent addition of several young high-ceiling players and highly effective player development system and additional financial resources underpin our position of strength. Your support is critical to our success, and I want to thank you for your incredible loyalty now and through the years. During the season, without fans due to COVID-19, you remain committed to our team, and you helped bring life and magic back to the friendly confines this year. You were extremely patient as we worked to build a championship roster and restore Wrigley Field. You believed in our plan to win and trusted us to deliver on our commitment to play championship baseball in the greatest ballpark in America. We did, as I assure you, we will do it again soon. We understand it might take a little time to process these changes as we integrate new players into our already talented roster. If the past tells us anything, watching a remarkable team come together is extremely exciting and rewarding, especially when everyone is aligned on the goal of winning the World Series. Highly anticipated call-ups, Wrigley Field debuts, immediate big league impact. It's all part of what makes our game so special. We're grateful for the chance to share in that joy and journey together again. Sincerely, Tom Ricketts. Sorry that was long, but I felt the need to read it. What was your reaction? Go ahead.
Me first? You first?
I just like when I throw it out there and there's dead silence when it's something as awkward as this letter.
Well, my initial reaction is that obviously there are going to be half-truths when an owner of a team has to send some kind of written statement to the fan base and to season ticket holders to try to get them to keep their tickets. So like, I don't feel like it's a productive exercise to go through each line of this and decide what is or isn't fact, because any owner, and I'm not defending him at all, I'm just saying any owner that sends something like this out knows, no matter what I say, most people are going to dislike it because everyone knows what happened. They didn't want to invest in these players. You can decide whether or not you feel that's the right direction for the team. I've made clear that I felt that investing in Chris Bryant was something I would do if we're not bottoming out, which clearly they are for the rest of 2021, but I'm saying moving forward. And so, yes, some of what he wrote in that letter is not true, in my opinion. Some of what he wrote in that letter is half true. I mean, if you ever remember the show Lie to Me that got canceled on Fox, you could have Dr. Lightman go through this entire thing and you could decide what you think is BS and what isn't. All I'm saying is that I read the letter, I sort of rolled my eyes, and it was very, you know, corporate speak, BS kind of things. Everyone knows what happened. Everybody knows why they did it. And so the only reason he released a letter is so that he can feel like he did something to try to make a mass exodus of season ticket holders not happen.
Do you think, and Beto, take this one, feel free at least, do you think he realizes how hard it is to win the World Series and how lucky they were that trades like the Arrieta trade, which you just, you know, that was a smart trade, but it worked out beyond their wildest dreams, right? I mean, draft picks, even though they didn't pick exactly perfectly, but Schwarber hit big in the World Series. Bryant was a outstanding number two that normally doesn't necessarily play this way, even though, you know, you can have all the great information. I just think like a lot of things fell into place for him. And I think he's a little delusional, at least in my mind, that they can just do this again.
Yeah. I think in general, I mean, to win a World Series, you have to have some luck, right? Like, that's call a spade. Nobody's like, oh my gosh, sure, we just caught zero breaks along the way and still won the World Series. Never happens. I just think in general, I don't care about the letter. Like, I get why people might be upset, and I'm not defending, you know, them per se, but it just, honestly, it feels like Groundhog Day, because I feel like a decade ago, we were having the exact same conversation that the Ricketts will not spend money to win a World Series. That was happening a decade ago. They only care about, because right now the narrative is like, they only care about stuff going up outside Wrigley Field. That was the narrative 10 years ago. They're putting the triangle building in. They only care about that. They don't put the product on the field. It's the same thing as the DraftKings Sportsbook. Yeah. And again, I'm not saying
memory.
It's the same thing though. I feel like we're literally having the exact same conversation. Yeah. I'm not saying that that what they did was right with all these guys and that they're not first worried about the bottom line. But I just think it's an exercise of futility to debate this when I think they have shown that when they feel the investment is good in the on-product field, they're going to make it, as evident by signing those guys and making those trades. Am I wrong?
No, I'm with you. I agree. I guess, look, if you go back in time when he first bought the team, I'm sitting there like, what are you doing keeping Jim Hendry around? Like, how long are you gonna wait on that? This is obvious. And it took him a minute, and then he got rid of Hendry and hired Theo, and at that point I'm like, okay, don't care what happens on the field the next couple of years. You hired Theo. Yeah. I believe in you. And I guess right now it's, well, Theo hired Jed's the guy. You should, in theory, feel comfortable with who's running the thing, but I'm not sure that he still, to me, has to prove it at the end of the day. I trust
Jed
him,
or Tom.
Jed.
Yeah, Jed, for sure. You're, I mean, like, I think he's proven it to an extent, but like, that's over now, right? Like, moving forward, we got to do something. Like, this has to pan out, this move.
I mean, the difference now is that Jed is a well-respected baseball executive, even correct, though he has not always been the top person. It's not like, I mean, it's not analogous to anything they've had in the past, because I think in the past they've hired sort of people that were never considered at the top of the field. Whereas I think there's been plenty of time in Jed's tenure with the Cubs, with the Red Sox, with the Padres, where it was sort of universally felt that he's one of the smart baseball executives and smart baseball minds in the sport. So I think from that perspective, he enters this job with far more credibility than just like some guy they pulled off the street to run the team. So, like, I mean,
the White Sox hired Hawk Harrelson as GM, for example.
Yeah, right. I mean, so it's not that, but I guess my whole thing is like what Tom Ricketts says has no meaning to me. It's correct, all about what they do, and what they chose is to not invest in this core moving forward. Now, he knew, unless he lives on another planet, that was going to be a deeply unpopular decision, whether or not it's good for them moving forward, right? Like, they had to know this was going to be an absolute nightmare from a PR standpoint, and it has been. The fact seems to be that baseball people that know a lot more about prospects than I do, or the three of us do, seem to feel like they did pretty well given the trades that they made. Yeah. I didn't feel like the day that they made the trade, I mean, I was just upset because I don't feel like a large market team should have to do this.
For sure.
But I think that given that they did it, they have some assets. I don't know if any of these guys will work out, but at least now you have some currency, as they would say, right? So like, if they need to go make a trade for a guy, maybe they can. And I think if anything has become more true in the last 3 days that we probably under-discussed during the winning era that they had, it is the fact that to keep winning, they traded away their prospects. They did that. That may be their fault, and we can look at it now and say they shouldn't have done it. But at the time, they were trying to maximize the winning window. So like, it's hard for me to be mad. Like, I get that it's an easy, lazy, meatball, dumb baseball narrative in Chicago. All of those things, all of those qualifiers are true to go, oh God, we traded Aloy and well, Cease for Quintana. That was the worst trade ever. It was a bad trade, but at the time they did it, I understood why they were doing it. I think if we're all honest, they were trying to win the World Series again. No one knew that Jose Quintana would suck. So it's easy to look at the surface of it and say, that was a horrible trade. It was, but I guess it's just like, it's lazy. And I think that the truth is they made these trades. Ronald Torres, I was watching play for the Phillies yesterday. Another guy that they traded. Torres, they traded to win the World Series. But I can't fault them for wanting to maximize every year they thought they could win. They just didn't win it again.
You can fault them on the Quintana trade for the simple fact that Justin Verlander was begging to come here. And that's
that may be fair.
That's their job to assess who's going to come and be dominant. Verlander went to the Astros and was straight nails and won a World Series, and you would have had him for less. You chose to pay a premium to get Quintana. Yeah, okay, that's sweet. You're trying to win, but you can't just hide behind that. We were trading, you know, no. That trade sucked, and you guys,
I mean, it clearly sucked.
Well, and I think part of the reason why they did that trade, for the record, which is where I will call out Tom Ricketts, they did that trade
cheap deal
because Quintana was under a much more team friendly contract, and Verlander was more expensive. So don't say that you did everything you could to keep the window open. They have not had Yankee style flexibility to spend. They haven't. And that's coming from the top. I'm not saying they haven't spent money, and I think he will spend money, but they do operate with a budget that teams of that level don't necessarily have. They don't spend like the Red Sox. They don't spend like the Yankees. They're not quite
the Dodgers.
The Dodgers, they don't spend like that.
It seems they don't have that money.
Maybe.
I don't think they may not have it. And I am not defending them, to be fair, but the Dodgers seem to have unlimited money and resources, right? The Yankees have unlimited money and resources. The Werner family that owns the Red Sox seems to now have unlimited money and resources because, you know, they bought, what was it, Manchester United. So like, I don't think that the Ricketts family, as rich as they might be and as much money as they've made on the Cubs, operate in the same stratosphere is those other owners. I'm not sure that they have that kind of money. I'm not saying they aren't rich or they can't spend near the top of the league and they should be expected to. I do think that they should be expected to, but I think what we're talking about here is I don't think there are the Dodgers and the Yankees because they can't be. I'm not saying that. I think that they would be in a certain respect if they could, because they want to make money too. And when the Cubs are good, they make money. So for them to choose to suck either means that they're cheap or that they don't have the money to be the Dodgers, the Yankees.
I mean, I think it's a combination, but you can't tell me that the Ricketts family couldn't have afforded to pay an extra, whatever it was, $7 million a year for Verlander.
Course.
I mean,
for
come
sure.
on.
Of course
the valuation's what, like $3 billion, and they bought it for $900 million.
Yeah. I mean, of course they definitely have money. They have a lot of money. I'm just saying that I think when it comes to like Dodgers and Yankees, we're talking about like,
also, like, you don't want to throw bad money out there, right?
Sure.
So, like, they still are smart. Like, they want to get a good return on your investment. What the crippling problems from the Yankees, like, 2 decades ago was that they just started throwing money at their problems. The Cubs were more than just that. It was like they needed to develop, like, they've developed zero pitching, right?
Right.
They didn't get as much talent development at the major league level as some other guys like Schwarber and some of these other dudes. Like,
right.
That
they had a huge miss
a problem in addition to not just spending money on their guys for extensions and stuff like that. So
to your point, Beto, like when you remember in the end of the Hendry regime, when they were throwing money around to make the sale, right?
Dude,
they were trying to sell the
incredible
team, and right. they were hurt for 5 years because of that.
That's why they had to wait, to Mark's point, to do anything. Because it's like, we got to wait till, and Soriano gets a lot of bad Well, he had some good years, but like they outbid themselves.
Yes.
And they gave Ramirez all this money when he was like 32. They gave all this money. They gave money to all these dudes that were on the back end of their contract, and they had to wait for that to run out.
Well, right.
And no trade clauses. We all got no trade clauses.
It was just disgusting what they did then, because they were just trying to drive up the
price.
It wasn't right. And which is just a straight screwing of the franchise in the end, whoever was buying it. And it was taking Cub fans. It was putting the fandom in, okay, we're going to have a ton on the books and we're going to suck, but hey, hopefully we got more money than we would have gotten because we did this. It was gross. Let me just put this out at the Ricketts family, and I'll leave it at this. And I know that most people don't care about season ticket holders, because that's a very small percentage, but that was a letter to season ticket holders who paid the freight when they did the first rebuild, paid full level tickets for a AAA team for years. And then once they won it, the family skyrocketed the prices of the tickets. There was no give back whatsoever. You paid for this all these years. Hey, now your tickets are actually undervalued because we won the World Series. No, we're going to skyrocket them again. And so season ticket holders have been paying over the value of tickets for years now. And so now you're going to have whatever you have next year. Maybe they'll be remotely competitive in the division. Most likely they won't. I hope they're not. I hope they take some time here to let everything just develop a little more organically than try to rush back there. But something in that letter should have said, as a season ticket holder, I can promise you we are going to increase the value of your tickets, either A, in a cost reduction, or B, because you're a season ticket holder, you will not be paying the full price of the ticket. Something. But they're not going to do that. They are going to ask season ticket holders to pay the same rate that they're paying now for a much poorer product. And I don't know why anybody would be a season ticket holder when the tickets on the secondary market are worth half of what they're worth that you're paying for.
You're paying for 3 years from now. You're hoping that they turn it around.
Right.
So regardless, if they're holding their spot in line, that's what they're paying for, right?
Right. Yeah. So I don't think there's a line anymore.
But there will be. You're getting ahead of the market. You don't think there will be if they're good again in 2 years.
I think that there's probably a difference between what the two of you are saying, which is that I think, to Mark's point, the value at the time could never have been higher because it was the chase. You were chasing the elusive championship.
100%.
I don't think you're ever going to have that again.
Never.
So I think that from now on, the value has a limit that never existed prior to 2016, right? Like when I could say in my family, we've had tickets for years, as you guys know. And my dad did not like having the tickets when they were horrible. But the whole thing was, we're going to see this through because they have Theo Epstein. And if they actually end up in the World Series, we're going to go. And we did. And it was life highlight stuff for me, my dad, my mom, all of us who had been, you know, my grandfather who had suffered through this BS for all these years, to finally have it literally pay off for us to go and go to the World Series for face value. But I think now that they've won, obviously, you know, it's just, there's going to be less demand. It's not, I haven't seen it in my lifetime. We've all seen it. So love to see it again, obviously. But I think that the dynamic is somewhere in between.
It's a great point. Like if you are holding on to the tickets, like some people who bought in like 2011, yours truly, I was buying in because I believed in Theo, and I thought the tickets would have enormous value if they did exactly what they did, and they did. And I was able to benefit from that, not to the level that I should have, but I was able to benefit. That if you're just doing it on that basis, it's a bad buy, because there's the only time you're going to get paid off is if they actually get to the World Series, and you're not going to get paid off like you did before.
No, you're not getting $20,000 a ticket.
No chance. No chance. Nope. And yeah. Any rate, but here,
yeah, I'll defer. You guys are more experts than me. Can I make you feel good though?
Sure.
Or you want to get to Wilson Contreras?
Well, we've got 10 minutes, so you can go.
I just wanted to talk about, because I know everyone's talking about like the difference in like oh, this is the same thing as 2011 and 2012. And I'm trying to want to make people feel good because I think there are sizable differences to the rebuild. You go back 10 years ago, look at where they had their system. They just had traded four of their top 10 prospects. So, and their system was very average at best, mediocre. So they lost that. They had still those contracts left. They had zero pieces that you could look at and be like, this guy you can actually either build around, or this guy is going to be at least a contributor on a team. Not one, not literally one. They now have what's considered to be a top 10 system in baseball. You have Wilson Contreras, who you could choose to build around. You only have what, $52 million committed in payroll?
It's 42
next year.
Yeah.
And you have someone that has shown in the past, even though it's different, that they will spend if it's good money. I just think that we had to go through 2012, 13, and 14 before we saw any glimpses of hope. I think with the trades, to Jordan's point, again, that being a scout, they're a lot closer to being in like middle of 2013 than they were middle of 20 of where they were 10 years ago. I don't think it's going to take as long to get there based on the trades they made, some of the pieces they already had. Brennan Davis is a better prospect than any of those guys were. And I don't know what he's going to turn into, but just the volume of guys that they have should bring in some optimism that it could turn around much faster than it did last time. I don't know if it will, but it could.
Their catching in the minors is strong, correct?
Yeah. It's their, so, one of their top prospects is a catcher.
Miguel Amaya.
So they could go there.
Their third rated.
Miguel Amaya. Yeah. Ethan Hearn's another guy, potential top 30. They're decent at catcher.
So are you paying market rate for Wilson Contreras, or are you trading him in the offseason?
Can I just say that I think I like Wilson Contreras as a guy. I like his passion. I think he's a good player. I have to admit, I kind of found it entertaining that he thought that he was a player you'd build around. I don't mean to be mean about it, but like, I feel like if he said that in a room of other players, there'd just be like an awkward silence because he's a good player. But like, he's not a franchise cornerstone. With due respect to Wilson Contreras, like, am I crazy here? Like, he's a nice
catching
player.
Wise, I mean, is there five catchers better in baseball?
Maybe, maybe not. But the point is, like, is he that good? Like, what are you paying him to give what he's giving?
I love him. I love the arm. I love the competitiveness, and he has.
Is he a franchise cornerstone?
Well, to me, he's like poor man's Yachty. Like that's the type of guy that I would like him to be. Like Yachty, just on the other side competing against him, he doesn't have the clutch gene that Yachty's got, and maybe that doesn't bear out in the numbers, Beto. I'm not sure, but every time Yachty's up in a clutch,
good way to proactively bring that up. Yeah, you saw me staring through you on that one.
Yeah, I know that you don't buy into clutch and whatever.
No, I do. Okay. I do. I just think sometimes it can be overvalued. I will agree. I think Yadier Molina's approach in clutch situation is why he's so good at it. So
right.
I would agree.
He's just, when Yadier's up there in a match, like he's gonna get you. You just feel it. And not that he obviously does it every time, but he does it often. So like I see Wilson in that frame, like he's the guy behind the plate that's leading the Cubs and their energy, but he's not clutch like Yadier. He just isn't.
He's also going to be 30 next year.
Yep.
That's the other thing.
His contract is up at the end of 22, if I'm correct.
One more year to go. Yep,
so
that's correct.
You're then talking about paying a 31-year-old catcher in 23 and beyond. I'm saying I like Wilson. I think he's a good player. I think he's been a solid, you know, two-time All-Star for the Cubs. I'm generally a fan of the way he plays. I think sometimes it gets a little bit too aggressive, but – you know, he picks a lot of runners off. He does exciting things behind the plate. He wants to be good, which is something that you can't always teach. You know, he wants to be the best catcher in the league, but he's not. So objectively, he is a good major league catcher. But I have to admit that when I read the quote, I'm like, build around you, dude. Like, you're good. Yeah. But like, what team is building? Like, what team is building around Wilson Contreras where he's the focal point and they're in the playoffs?
I will say one thing that you could do. We talked about the age, and it depends on the value cost, the whole cost benefit analysis thing. But one thing that could increase his longevity and include someone like playing Amaya is that the DH is coming to the National League. So there you can maybe prolong his career by DHing him if his bat comes around too. It's a small variable, but it's certainly something they'll take into consideration.
I mean, he has not missed much at all this year. I mean, he's been on the field all the time. The
dude catches like 140. They haven't had a backup catcher. Chirinos is fine, but before that, they didn't have anyone. I feel like that's been the last few years. Tim Fedorovich. That's our guy.
Who was that?
Let's bring back John Baker.
Who was the backup catcher that we traded to Baltimore? Steve Clevenger, right?
For Arrieta. Yeah. Clevenger. Stevie Baseball, as I called him.
Yeah. I would pay Wilson. I'm a little biased, but I like the Contreras energy. By the way, thank you for being on the podcast. The words of Jordan Bernfield,
represent your thoughts.
They just disgust me. I mean,
I like him. I think that's why I'm qualifying. I like him. I'm just saying that like franchise cornerstone and good player are two different things.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, but maybe he's confident in his abilities. Maybe he's doing like the, hey, all these other guys are leaving, but I want to be in Chicago. I actually mean it.
And I love that. I love the sentiment. It's just like, you know, Chris Bryant is a franchise cornerstone.
Well,
you pay him to be your cornerstone. Wilson Contreras is a really nice role player, but he's not a cornerstone.
So what he said, because I know you guys were not there when I interviewed him yesterday, and this was ahead of us. I'm playing it ahead of us talking today. But I asked him, like, what about 2016 do you think would play on the next World Series team? What was it about that team? And the one thing he named was it was a mix of veterans and young players, and which is very basic, but I do think it's worth noting. And he's like, and that team stuck together from April to November. So he's naming that the current version of the Cubs, he's naming some level of strife in that clubhouse for whatever reason. And he's also naming that, like, he came up that year in June, hit a home run in his first at bat. Yeah. Met Carmen at Tony's Burritos on Damon and Belmont and on August 17th.
Place. Yeah. There a few times past midnight.
Yeah. He walks in. It's August. No one recognizes him. I'm staring. I'm like, that's Wilson Contreras. Hey, Wilson, can I get a quick pick? I just pointed at my phone. He's like, you know, he kind of waved me over. So, you know, but the dude's gone from that guy to everyone recognizes him and he wants to be the face of the franchise. I appreciate that out of him. But he, you know, he was a young guy that year. You had a ton of young players, and then you had the veterans, Lester and Lackey, Zobrist, right?
Hayward.
Dexter, like there was a night, and then, you know, you had
they're also good. That helps, right?
And they were like also really, really talented
on the field. Probably had something to do with it.
Second year, Chris, veteran Rizzo, like, but I think what he's naming is, who knows if they can get back there, but there was something missing that I think was on it with that mix that they had then.
This is going to end. Do you want to send another one and we can finish it or no?
Nah, I hate this team. Do you have any other thoughts?
And do you want to do any other thoughts? Because it's going to end in.
I know. I want your one last.
I want all the Kevin Alcantara and Alex Canario home run, like, grainy videos from the minor leagues. Give me all of it. 2009 to 2014, Beto is back. All I care about is the future.
Judging by consumption, 1% of the people are listening at this point, so we're at diminishing returns plus right now, Jordan. But I love that.
Harry Doyle. Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I would love one last brilliant thought in the 20 seconds we have.
When Contreras homered on the first pitch of his career, I thought he was Buster Posey.
Hey, I think Cub fans are excited about Wilson Contreras.
This program was recorded on tape for a live audience.
I mean, he's probably having enough trouble just keeping his heart rate down, and then he gets a standing ovation from 40,000 people. That's a goosebump kind of moment here before his first ever big league at bat. High and deep to center field, and it is gone! Can you believe it? What a scene and what a moment for Wilson Contreras homering in his first major league at bat. Got a standing ovation before the at bat and a curtain call after.
Yeah, of course, I would love to be a part of of a new World Series for Chicago Cubs.